It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This year marks the 40th anniversary of what some call the greatest round of golf ever played. It happened here in the Pittsburgh area in 1973 at the U.S. Open at Oakmont. I'm joined now in Studio A by Stephen Schlossman. He's a professor of history at Carnegie Mellon University who teaches the only collegiate-level course on the history of golf, and he's the author of a retrospective piece called Fact, Fancy, and Johnny Miller's 63 at the 1973 U.S. Open at Oakmont. Stephen Schlossman, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Very pleased to be here.
I'm going to have you move just a little closer to that microphone there, sir.
Very good.
You say that a number of myths, some generated by Miller himself, persist about the 1973 U.S. Open. What are they?
Well, one of the basic myths is that Johnny Miller's 63 came easily to him, that somehow the course had been made very easy because of a sprinkler malfunction, softening the greens, making them slower, just the morning of his round, and a variety of other explanations that tried to really, if not denigrate, at least take away from the glory of Miller's round. And one of the things we tried to do, my co-author Adam Lazarus and I, in this piece and in the book Chasing Greatness that preceded it, was to explore some of the facts. And first of all, in terms of how easy it was for Miller to score 63, well, it turns out that very few other scores in the 60s were shot that day. And in fact, the distribution of scores that day was no lower than in other rounds. So it wasn't easy, and we wanted to kind of emphasize the glory of Miller's achievement. It turns out also that though there was a sprinkler malfunction that made the course easier to play, turns out that came on a Friday, not on a Sunday. So people have misunderstood the level of achievement that Miller made that day.
And what makes this the greatest round of golf ever played? Why is it considered that?
Well, it's the first time that 63 had been shot at Oakmont. And we have to go back a little bit to remember that Oakmont was considered throughout the first half of the 20th century the toughest golf course in the world. So that just that fact alone, shooting 63 at Oakmont was inconceivable. But it was also the lowest round and remains the lowest round, lowest score ever shot in U.S. Open history. And it's the lowest score ever shot to win any major championship. So it's this kind of comeback, come from behind quality and the just sheer lowness of the score that make it remarkable. In terms of Oakmont particularly, Miller shot a 31 on the back nine at Oakmont. I've done as much research as I know how to do. No one ever has shot 31 at Oakmont on the back nine. So it's certainly the greatest back nine ever played in U.S. Open history. And I would argue, and maybe some would disagree with me, that it's even more of an achievement than Jack Nicklaus's famous 30 on the back nine at Augusta National to win the Masters in 1986. Other people have shot 30 on the back nine at Augusta National. Nobody's ever shot 31 at Oakmont.
So what kind of research did you do? I mean, people's memories are different. There's a lot to sift through, and apparently you're not a member at Oakmont. So how did you gain an understanding of the nuances of the course and the challenges that Johnny Miller faced on that fateful day 40 years ago?
Well, I'd come to know Oakmont itself fairly well because I'd helped the club a little bit, at least, put together a strategy for developing its archives in the 1990s, and at that time I was allowed to play the course a fair amount. So the personal experience helped. I'd also spent a tremendous amount of time out there at the 1994 U.S. Open, so I knew the course pretty well and had opportunity to play it enough to really come to know it. But we relied a lot on interviews, very lengthy interviews with Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Raymond Floyd, many others, not with Johnny Miller himself, interestingly, because he decided not to speak to us, and we respect that. So interviews were absolutely essential, not just former players, but caddies, observers, and all that. But one thing I knew as a professional historian is that you can't really rely on memory alone to reconstruct the past, particularly events of 30 or 40 years ago. So we relied a lot on archival material, some at the USGA archives in Far Hills, New Jersey. We relied especially on newspaper coverage of the players that we focused on for the years prior to the 1973 Open, local newspapers that covered events in tremendous detail and had lots of talk by the players about what they'd done, and the digitization revolution, making available through electronically all these small newspapers, was absolutely vital to our research.
What were the expectations about the kind of scores we would see, the level of play at the 1973 U.S. Open at Oakmont?
That's a really interesting question, coming right after the Open just played at Marion, where the expectations were for very, very low scores because the course supposedly was short to begin with and softened by rain.
And you were just there.
I was just there.
And the winner won with a one over par, so nobody even broke par in the tournament.
No one broke par this time. No one broke par last year. And the last time the tournament was held at Oakmont in 2007, 5 over par won. So the U.S. Open is notoriously a very difficult setup.
So what was it about 1973? What happened?
Well, going into the tournament, people expected the scores to be as high as they always had been. Palmer and Nicklaus had tied in 1962, if I recall correctly, shooting 282, about two under par, and that was considered to be very good scoring. They separated themselves out from the others. Expectations going into the tournament were high for high scores, and after the first day, the scores were very high, actually even higher than in 1962. But as we found out, that sprinkler malfunction did indeed happen on Friday morning. It softened the greens tremendously, slowed the greens a bit, at least for part of the day, and with the result that lower scores were shot in the second round of the 1973 Open than ever before in a U.S. Open. So that was a remarkable thing. But the thing about Oakmont, and indeed just about Marion too, despite the rain, is that those greens returned to their speed very, very quickly. They remained a bit soft, but they returned to their fast speed very quickly. So come Saturday, in the U.S. Open in 1973, scores went up to the highest they were at, throughout the championship. And those scores remained high even through the Sunday round. Miller was the anomaly. Miller and Lanny Watkins, who shot 65 that day, both guys who had reputations throughout their lives of being able to go lower than anybody else and shoot these magnificent rounds, both did it on that day, and nobody else did.
And this was supposed to be Arnold Palmer's U.S. Open, since this was taking place in his backyard, but it didn't work out that way.
It almost worked out that way. Arnold Palmer took this very seriously. He was 43 years old, just as Phil Mickelson just celebrated his 43rd birthday yesterday. Arnold Palmer had to deal with a lot of people saying that you're over the hill, you can't win the big one anymore. But Palmer took off from playing a full month before the championship at Oakmont. He worked with his dad, who he hadn't been working with for years, to try to fine-tune his game, get used to playing golf in Western PA. Felt so confident about going back to Oakmont, where he'd played so much as a child, that he didn't even wear glasses or contact lenses, as he'd been accustomed to doing. This was his place. The press treated it as his tournament to win. And fact of the matter, going into the last round, he was tied for the lead with three others. He found himself situated in the next-to-last group, with the man he most feared, Julius Burros, behind him. He really felt he could watch what was going on with all the people who could possibly be contenders, and that if he shot one or two under par, he would surely win, because Oakmont was just that tough and the course was playing very fast again. And he went through all the way to the 12th hole, assuming that he was in the lead, in command. He was playing very, very well. And then he got the shock of his life. And they really conveyed that shock to us in the interview 36 years later. You could see it in his eyes how much the pain still was apparent. He learned that Miller, who he didn't even think was in contention, had somehow or other gone 8 under for the day, had finished his round, and was one shot ahead of him. Palmer thought he was one shot ahead, maybe even two of most other contenders. And Palmer didn't quite recover from the shock. He made a bogey on the 12th hole, a bogey on the 13th hole, a bogey on the 14th hole, and his chance to win was over. And he told us that it was the second biggest disappointment in his entire career save for the loss to Billy Casper at Olympic in San Francisco a number of years earlier.
And so Johnny Miller wins with the 63, which was a record, and we have just 30 seconds left. Will anybody duplicate this feat? What are the chances that someone could duplicate this feat in the future?
There's always a chance. But if the USGA continues to shape up courses for U.S. Open competition as just shaped up Marion with the rough, very, very high greens fast, I doubt it.
Stephen Schlossman is a professor of history at Carnegie Mellon University. He teaches the only collegiate-level course on the history of golf, and we'll provide a link to his piece, Fact, Fancy, and Johnny Miller's 63 at the 1973 U.S. Open at Oakmont on our website at WESA.FM. Stephen Schlossman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, musician Warren Haynes, who's performed with the Allman Brothers and surviving members of the Grateful Dead, joins us to talk about his collaboration with the Pittsburgh Symphony on a tribute to Jerry Garcia. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening.